So you don't think the federal bureaucracy is so creative? A new analysis of the latest Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey shows innovation in government is on the wane. At least that's what federal employees think. Just a third say their agencies reward outside-the-box thinking. The Partnership for Public Service and its partners in the analysis found some bright spots, however. At the top, NASA. Author Rod Pyle has written a new book on the agency. It's called Innovation the NASA Way, and he joins us now. Rod, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks. So you write this book as someone who I'm guessing was always a little starstruck by NASA. Is that right?
Can you tell? Yeah. I mean, I was born in 1956, so I'm of the right age to remember the Apollo program in great detail, and that was really the inspiration for all this.
So if you had to sum up innovation in NASA's terms, what would you say? What illustrates it the best to you?
Well, you know, it's really hard to overlook the space race, and that's roughly 1957 through 1973. And, of course, NASA harkens back to that, although they try not to too much because they want to look ahead. But, you know, Apollo is kind of the bright light that stands out during those years. And in 1961, President Kennedy said, we're going to land on the moon by the end of the decade. And at that point, we had exactly 15 minutes of spaceflight experience. So a lot of the top people at NASA turned to each other and metaphorically said, oh, boy, we don't even know what we don't know at this point. So they're forced to innovate dramatically at a time when most of this stuff really probably shouldn't have worked. And they were kind of flying these missions right at the edge of their capability, but it worked. Now, it's easy to look back and say, oh, that's the past, you know, and that they had 5% of the federal budget, and now they've got less than 1%, half of 1%. But anybody who saw the Curiosity Mars rover land has seen that kind of innovation take place now with drastically, drastically reduced budgets. And that in itself was an amazing accomplishment worthy of the same kind of attention that we give Apollo.
It seems like NASA, perhaps more than most agencies, has really run the gamut from having these great things start from scratch, from absolute zero, and then having a lot of expectations falling short when it comes to some dramatic disasters like the Challenger, and having to meet all of these expectations, no matter where they start from, in a very public way. Just, I want to see, how is there a formula? I mean, does NASA have a formula, no matter what the circumstances are that it starts out with?
Not per se. I mean, there are formulas you can observe in hindsight or from a distance. So, for instance, one of them would be bid low and get the job, in quotes. So if you want to get a program funded, you probably can't say what you think it might cost. You have to say what it can cost if everything goes well. So, for instance, the Curiosity rover, which I just mentioned because that's a current thing, went about 100% over budget, but there are a whole lot of reasons for that, that if you've got time to explain them, makes sense. But if you don't, people just kind of shake their head and go tisk tisk. But when you really look at how they spend their money, they're pretty efficient. As you said, there have been setbacks and some disasters. There's also been literally hundreds of programs that were proposed and many dozens that were started, including recently Constellation under George Bush Jr., which never see the light of day because they're not funded, or they're funded partly, and that goes away. And, of course, this gets into congressional politics and districting and all that kind of thing. The bottom line is, they do the best with what they can get. And let's not forget, these budgets always come late, and they're always less than they ask for. So it's a tough market in which to compete. One thing I would add, when you look at the Mars exploration rover, Spirit and Opportunity, we've got Opportunity up there 10 years later, still driving. It's broken all the records. It's still looking around at things and making new discoveries at Mars every day. And we've got the Voyager spacecraft, who have left the solar system, one of them anyway, 38 years later, these things are still working. So in a sense, they almost become a victim of their own success because they have to keep paying to track and operate these spacecraft because they build them so well and so smartly that they continue to return science all these decades later.
So tell me a little bit more about the book. What was the research that you did for it?
Well, I had written six space books prior to this about the space race and about the Apollo program and about Mars exploration and so forth. And I thought, you know, I want to look at a new direction. And I had done some I designed a course at the Johnson Space Center on leadership in the Apollo years for the conference board. And I really enjoyed that. And I thought, well, you know, innovation is kind of the new thing. I want to give that a shot. So I got on Amazon, like most of us authors do, and we're trying to dream up a book, and I typed in NASA and innovation, and there was nothing on the shelf.
You found your market.
And there's nothing on the shelf. This never happens to us, right? I mean, this is like an oh my God moment. So I thought, I want to write this book. And of course, there's tons of books, some of them very good out there on innovation theory and, you know, how to try and optimize your company to cultivate innovation and pressure innovation and so forth. But the best one, the best ones I saw were really telling of inspirational stories. And I thought that's what I want to do. So I collected kind of NASA's finest hours, both in manned and unmanned exploration, and put together this book based on those stories, trying to call out the moments where they faced these immense challenges, like building this immense Saturn V moon rocket, and how they met these in overarching terms.
And who is the book for?
Well, I think, you know, innovation is an interesting thing because you hear of it spoken in many, many ways. But I think when you look at the real core of it, it's a creative act. It's an act of inspiration. It's a momentary thing that hits people. You can build all kinds of apparatus around it, but these are things that, unfortunately, from the corporate standpoint, have a bit of serendipity in them. What NASA was able to do in almost in hindsight was sort of institutionalize that moving forward. So what I wanted to do was write a book that could work anywhere from people in upper management down to middle management to just kind of show how these things happen, to show what kind of environment cultivated and nourished this and how that might be something that they could move into their own work environment.
Well, this is really relevant as we're talking about the federal employee viewpoint survey. Clearly, many federal employees don't feel like their institutions have this type of innovation, despite it being a big buzzword here in Washington. Mm-hmm. How has NASA made innovation part of the fabric of the agency?
When they propose a new program, and you have to propose a lot of new programs to get anything funded, because this isn't China, right? You can't just have a couple of guys at the top say, okay, we'll do this for 10 years. This is a year-to-year thing. It's a political cycle. They turn to their people, their best and brightest people, and there's a lot of very smart people there working for less than they can get in private industry because they love it, and they're very passionate about it, which is, I think, really the key to all this. And they say, look, blue sky, no limits, out of the box. Tell us, A, what you want to do, and B, how you want to do it. And that's how programs like the Curiosity rover come along. Now, when they took that forward, they sort of had to pass the laugh test, and it was a very difficult thing to do. But taking JPL as an example of a NASA field center, it's a very strongly creative place. That's encouraged. People are encouraged to think beyond the limits and then scale things back as the money is appropriated to the appropriate level that it's actually going to work. So they are given a lot of support that way from people who in other sectors of government might be administrators that wouldn't be quite so creative about inspiring this kind of thinking.
Tell us a little bit about that laugh test, because I imagine that a lot of people have big ideas that they know will work if they're just given a chance, but they've got to get past that first barrier, and that can be very intimidating.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll go back a few years. You know, when they decided they were going to head off to the moon, they thought, okay, well, we need a lunar lander, so we need this thing that's only going to fly from lunar orbit down the surface and come back. How hard can that be? So Grumman Aerospace got this contract, and they're very excited about it, and it was, you know, a couple of billion dollars tops. It ended up being a lot more than that, but that was the original appropriation. And they had to design this thing that was the first true spaceship. It would never fly in an atmosphere. Well, it's a company that had been building fighter planes in World War II that won the war in the Pacific and jet fighters. So not only did they have to prove to the government to NASA that they could build this wacky-looking spacecraft, because their proposal was just a little balsa wood ball on a platform, literally with paper clips for legs. That was their early engineering model. But then they had to turn their own engineers and say, okay, we've got to build this thing. And these guys looked at them and said, there's stuff sticking out all over the place. This thing can't fly. It's as thin as tissue paper. So it became very difficult to try and get this sort of thing sold. Jumping forward with the Curiosity Mars rover, this thing was too big and too heavy to land the way they'd done rovers in the past, which is always rockets, parachutes, rockets again, and then landing bags. You know, if you remember, they bounced to a stop, and then these bags deflated.
And the rover's about the size of an economy-sized car?
Well, the previous ones were smaller. The first one was about the size of a toaster oven. The Mars Exploration Rover Spirit and Opportunity are the size of golf carts. Then here comes Curiosity, and you're right, it's the size of a Mini or a small Nissan. So they knew they had to come up with a different system. Well, you've got this big, heavy thing with rockets under it, which is like trying to balance a bowling ball on a broomstick. It's very difficult. So they had to come up with something different than what they had done before, and that's where this whole sky crane thing came up with this rocket pack, and then it slows to a hover and lowers this rover down on a bunch of ropes. And I remember the first time I saw it. I can't use the words that went through my mind on the radio, but it was sort of a huh moment. There's got to be an easier way than that. There's a couple hundred points of potential points of failure in there. But when you talk to the engineers, and, you know, they're really interesting people because they can barely get the words out. They're so excited about what they've done and telling you the stories about when they did it. It was really the only way that it was going to work. And when you look at it from their perspective, with the things that shouldn't go wrong, it makes a lot of sense. But they had to take it to the head of NASA and say, okay, we're going to stop with the rocket pack and lower this thing on a bunch of strings, and then the rocket will fly away and it will drive off and do its thing. And he went, prove it to me. So they did.
Rod, just briefly, because unfortunately we're running out of time. Innovation, how do other agencies capture it? I mean, can they do anything when they see NASA succeeding at such a different realm, you know, of course, that NASA deals yeah. with than the other ones? Anything for that they can take away, though?
A problem is a problem, and the thing that NASA has encapsulated very well, different eras, different levels, but they approach things with an idea of boldness. We're going to think outside the box. Don't be constrained by the past. Leap, you know, don't walk, leap. And then the passion. You know, the people, unmistakably, every field center you go to, have a great and deep passion for what they're doing. And if there's a way to generate about that, about what you're doing, and to be bold in your thinking, you're going to find that things are going to change.
Author Rod Pyle's new book is Innovation, the NASA Way, Harnessing the Power of Your Organization for Breakthrough Success. Rod, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.